Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship, as well as make a determination to follow the path that the Supreme One has laid out, to understand the truth that He showed the world, a world covered in under the veil of ignorance. May our minds follow the energy of the Buddha and let's worship the Supreme One by chanting Namaskar 3 times all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Something that's really interesting about this asana is that we normally do things 3 times, right? Namaskars 3 times. We worship the Buddha 3 times. And a lot of things we do 3 times. We recite gathas 3 times. Have you ever thought of why? Why 3? Why is 3 the magic number? Right? Why not 4 times? Why not 7? Why 3? It's really interesting because, you know, these aren't questions that we normally ask. You know, it's something that we do. Society has said to do it 3 times and we do it. But we don't really question ourselves and ask ourselves, why 3? What's wrong with 2? Why can't we just say it once and get it over and done with? Or why not say it 10 times and, you know, strengthen our faith? Now, in nature, 3 is a special number. Because one of the strongest shapes is a triangle. As well as, there are 3 qualities of nature as well, which is anicca, dukkha, anatta. And also, we have the noble triple gem. Which is very interesting because, you know, when we worship the Buddha, you're not really worshipping the Buddha here. Something that we talked about many, many months back is, you know, when you worship the Buddha, who are you worshipping? Are you worshipping? No, because if you think about it, you don't go worship anything, do you? You know, we've come to a time where not many people go worship, you know, fire, water, trees. Nowadays we have, you know, say for example, Buddhists will go to a temple and worship pagodas, bo trees, statues. But when you are worshipping, who are you actually worshipping? Very nice. We are not worshipping a statue. We are not worshipping a person. We are worshipping something that is completely different. Now, the reason why we have a statue is to remind us of a person, but not of the person. Instead of the person, what the person has given us. We worship 3 times, not because we're worshipping the Buddha. We're worshipping 3 qualities. If not, you can almost say 3 different types of qualities. The quality of Buddha, the quality of Dhamma, and the quality of Sangha. So when you're worshipping the Buddha, you're not worshipping the Buddha. You're worshipping the quality of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. In other words, the truth. You're worshipping the truth. Because if I asked you, who is the Buddha? Now, anyone could say anything. How tall he is. You know, he had Purusha Lakshana, which is 32 perfect parts, I think. You can talk about that, but really those aren't really for us to worship. Instead, those are just explaining who the Buddha was, for us to get a clear image. But really we're worshipping what? The quality of the Buddha, the quality of the Dhamma, the quality of Sangha. So if I was to ask you, what is the quality of the Buddha? The first answer that comes to our head is, Iti Piso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddha. Which talks about 9 qualities. The quality of the Buddha isn't bounded by 9. The quality of the Buddha is infinite. They say only another Buddha can truly explain the qualities of Buddha. But if he was to explain it, it would take his entire lifetime. So if a Buddha wanted to explain who a Buddha was, from the moment he becomes a Buddha to the moment he passes away to Parinibbana, right, passes away, he can talk about the qualities of the Buddha, whether that's, you know, for him, maybe hundreds of years. So we're not worshipping just worshipping the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. We're worshipping the qualities. This is why number three is very interesting. Because there's three. Because who is the Buddha? Question's wrong. What is the Buddha? The Buddha is what? The Buddha energy is the energy of this, of the truth. Of not just the truth, of the path. The Dhamma, the energy, or what is the Dhamma? The Dhamma is the truth. And what is the Sangha? What is the Sangha? It's very interesting, isn't it? Because if I asked you, what is the Sangha? The first thing that comes to your head is what? A monk. You know, a person wearing a robe and a bald head. But have you heard this saying that, you know, a beard doesn't make a philosopher? The Mahasangha isn't just a robe and a bald head. You know, I actually really want to explain, you know, to take a moment today and actually explain to you what is the Mahasangha. Because I think it's very interesting to see what it truly is. Because again, we're not talking about a group of people. We're not talking about, you know, back 2,500 years ago, the Buddha had his disciples, the great Arahant Sariputta, Moggallana, Angulimala, Mahakashyapa. These are the Mahasangha. We're not really talking about, you know, people here. We're talking about something completely different. That's why the Buddha explains and says, you know, when you're making an offering, don't offer it to a person. So when Mahaprajapati Gautami offers the great the Buddha robes, the Buddha says, Prajapati, don't offer it to me. Offer it to the Mahasangha. So we have to look at what the Mahasangha is. But before we look at what the Mahasangha is, we have to look at what the Mahasangha isn't. To explain the normal or the ordinary, then only can we explain the extraordinary. And for this, we'll be. Why not? We'll be explaining it in the way of the mind, right? Because we all understand by now that we are not talking about people, right? The Dhamma never talks about people. We're talking about a mind. A mind that has the causes of ignorance and attachment. So if we were to talk about who the Mahasangha isn't, or what is the ordinary? Now, we all know, what is ordinary? What is an ordinary being? A mind, a body, and defilements. So if we were to understand what is ordinary, we have the mind, body we won't talk about, because no matter what you are or who you are, whether you have, you know, two arms, one arm, it doesn't matter. We're talking about a mind here. A mind and defilements. For now, let's write out the defilement process. So defilement process starts off with ignorance, attachment, vexation, insanity mode, and then jati. That is the defilement process. Very simply, there are many, many pieces in between. For example, this likable feature, and then, you know, there's more things, bhava, jati, and lots of other things. But in the very basic way, this is the defilement process. Now, this is normal. However, when you don't have the quality of the Mahasangha, what is different? What is different? You have the mind and you have defilements. You don't understand you have the mind and defilements. You may understand you have a mind, but you don't understand the process of defilements. So someone who doesn't understand the Dhamma, who has no understanding of Dhamma, what is their purpose? What is their purpose? Their purpose is very simple. How can I make... So they don't understand there's a process here, but how can I make this feeling happy? Because someone who doesn't understand Dhamma doesn't understand what jati is. Instead, they see themselves to be a simple I. How can I make I happy? How can I make myself happy? Their entire purpose of life is very simple. How can I make myself happy? Now, I want you all to look through your own lives to tally with this. Right? Before you had the Dhamma, what was your main goal in life? To be happy. To make myself happy. You never saw that this was a problem. You never thought that I was a problem, except because you don't know that it was not me. You don't know it was a feeling. You thought it was I. So your purpose in life was to try to make myself as happy as possible. So what did you do? You went round. Going round, collecting as many views as you possibly can. You think about it, growing up. From ever since you opened your eyes, what were you doing? Collecting as much sight as you possibly can. Ever since your ears can hear, what were you doing? Collecting as much sound as you possibly can. Ever since you can smell, what were you doing? Taking as many smells as you possibly can. Now, when I talk about sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, it's not only positive things. You don't only want to see positive things. Which is very strange, isn't it? I mean, we all want to see good things, right? But we don't. We want to see. I mean, that's why, you know, if someone was eating something, say for example, someone had made a dal curry, and they said, you know, this is really salty. This is really salty. What do you want to do? Is it? Knowing very well that, you know, one person said it's salty, you have this question, well, is it? Can I try? Or something even better. You know, sometimes, you know, in your pantry cupboards, sometimes you have tins of things that are expired. Yes, I mean, you don't know everything in your pantry, right? You don't take a stock of everything that you own, right? One day you find a can or a small tub of something and it's expired. Say your spouse opens that and says, "Phew." You also want to have a small smell, just a sniff. Not because you want to experience the bad smell, but you want to smell. So ever since you opened your eyes, you wanted to see. Before you opened your eyes, you wanted to see. But ever since you opened your eyes, you are now taking as much sight as you possibly can, as much sound as you possibly can, smell, taste, touch, taking in as many views as you possibly can. Growing up, you know, one thing that that we can all agree on is how dangerous it is, you know, as we are progressing in a society, how dangerous it is to give a child a phone. Or how dangerous it is to give, you know, a child, you know, access to everything. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if you give a 3-year-old a phone, they're going to start, you know, exploring the entire internet and destroying their life. No, but if you give a 3-year-old a phone, you 3-year-old, you know, something, this 3-year-old will get as many views as they possibly can. Taking the amount, as many views as they possibly can. That's what's dangerous. Views are what's dangerous. But, you know, before we understood this process, we didn't think views were dangerous. We thought, you know, views are actually really good. Because why? The more views I have, the more opportunities I get to make myself happy. So you know, someone comes and says, you know, yesterday I had this really great lasagna. Right? It was absolutely amazing. Now you take the view that lasagna, something tastes good. So you want to do what? Eat lasagna. So those of you who have watched Garfield, the first thing after you watch Garfield, the first thing that comes to your head is, what does lasagna taste like? Because it's a view that you take. You never question the view. You thought, you know, if I had lasagna, I will be happy. If I take lasagna, I will feel complete. Therefore, I'll take lasagna. I remember the first time I watched Garfield, I had this question, what is lasagna? Right? It's supposed to smell good, it's supposed to taste good, and that's why I went and to my mother and started nagging and saying, Mama, please can we have some lasagna? Now, my mother does not know how to make lasagna. And I don't think she was willing to learn how to make lasagna. So I remember what she did was she bought a frozen lasagna, put it onto a plate, put it into the microwave, and just gave it to me. And from that day onwards, I thought this was what lasagna is. Again, it's a view that we take. We never question. We don't question the views. All we think is the more the views, the more the merrier. The more views I take, the merrier I'm going to be, the more happy I can be. That's why, this is what we call maturity as well. How do you define maturity? See, this is a problem that we face in the monastery. Is that some people have such strong views. That's very hard to break. Because they have, you know, they think, you know, if I'm sweeping should happen like this. This is how it's supposed to happen. So I remember I was able to talk to one of our Anagarikas a long time back. And one thing he would always talk about is, you know, Abhandra, you know, Soya is not very good. So soya, you know, has no nutrition and whatnot. But no matter how much you say, you know, food is to fill the stomach, you say, you know, soya, no, I can't eat soya. No matter how hard you try, the views are so strong. But that's what we call maturity. Or a part of maturity. Let's not call it all of maturity. A part of maturity is how strong you hold views. So as more time passes, as more views we hold, we come to the state where we have so many views. And therefore, there are so many things that can make you and I so happy or so sad, according to our views. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get as many things as possible. Because of views, we think, you know, if we have a materialistic view, what we try to do is we collect. You know, most of you now live and breathe in the monastery, right? But those of you, you know, who still have a very, you know, who still are new or, you know, haven't entered the path of Dhamma yet, just think about how many things you have at home. I remember in our house, we had a separate room, right? A small room that we put extra stuff in. And then we had a loft. So on top of the house, on, you know, ceiling, roof, there's an extra space. And that was filled with what? Extra stuff. In an attic. Filled with what? Extra stuff. All this, all that. You know, I remember Amma would you know, one day decide to clean it and say, you know, I found the first sock you wore. And then, you know, it's like this. We are collecting. Because why? We think the more I have, the more things that will make me happy. So we're now going out and instead, we are now trying to find as much things that we can to be happy. And we question nothing. We are sheep to society. Where if society says, jump, we say, how high? When society says, run, we say, how far? We don't question, we do. That is the ordinary. That is the basis of ordinary. That is what ordinary is. Then we go on and we talk about what is the Mahasangha. What is the Mahasangha? And again, not who is the Mahasangha. What is the Mahasangha? Because, like I said, you know, the beard doesn't make the philosopher. Right? No matter how long your beard is, you're not going to be a philosopher. Just like that, the Mahasangha is not about what you wear. You know, Swami Nanda, I'm wearing, you know, the Uttara Salua. I'm wearing a Patkada. I'm part of the Mahasangha. No, Mahasangha doesn't start there. Where does Mahasangha start? Where does Mahasangha start? Actually, it starts a bit before that. Something that we may have in our head is that, you know, so the sasana starts the moment I listen to the sermons. The moment I understand sermons, that's where Mahasangha starts. Actually, it's before that. The path to Mahasangha starts where? The moment you say, or the moment you feel, Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. The moment, not you say, so again, this doesn't mean the moment you say Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, you become part of the Mahasangha. No, the moment you truly feel Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, which means what? The Buddha, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in Dhamma. I take refuge in the Sangha. For what? To escape from samsara. To escape from mental suffering. So if anyone comes saying that, you know, I want to do merits to get rid of suffering. I want to listen to sermons, or, you know, I want to understand Anishtukkanatha. If I want to do merits to get rid, or if I want to do merits in order to get rid of mental suffering, that is where the Mahasangha starts. So that's why the Mahasangha starts if someone gives a sadhugar. If someone gives a, you know, says sadhu, 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 seeing a merit, that is where Mahasangha starts. Because that's where the person will start to do what? Start to do things in order to go on this path. This is why our gates are open to anyone. Anyone who has the merits to come inside. Because once they come inside, we believe that they are what? Part of the Mahasangha. See, bhikkhu bhikkhuni, upasaka upasaka. Whether you're a monk or a nun, whether you are a laity, it doesn't matter. Because the Mahasangha starts the moment you think, buddhang sarnang gacchami. The moment you give a sadhuka, you know, what greatness this is. That's where the Mahasangha starts. Then comes the merits. Because the moment you think buddhang sarnang gacchami, now what do you think is how can I do this? How can I get rid of my mental suffering? Therefore, what do? You start doing merits. Now, when you're doing merits, what you're actually doing isn't just doing merits. You are starting to fulfill the perfections. Because the Mahasangha is the fulfilling, or the path to fulfilling the perfections. Now, like I say every time, I really do want to one week talk about the 10 perfections, because that's very, very interesting as well as very important. Because to become a Samma Sambuddha, you have to fulfill the 10 perfections. To become a Paccheka Buddha, you also have to feel the 10 perfections. To become an Arahant Buddha, you also have to feel the 10 perfections. To become a Svotapanna, you also have to start feeling the what? 10 perfections. To the degree will change. So for example, to become a Samma Sambuddha, you have to fulfill them to the absolute maximum possible. That's why you hear in the Jataka the stories that the Buddha will sacrifice an arm and a limb to do anything. To become a Paccheka Buddha, not as many, and to be an Arahant Buddha, not as much. But the fulfilling of the perfections is very important. And then while doing all that, and then do you start to listen to them? The moment you listen to Dhamma, you now realize I is just a what? A feeling. A feeling of the sense of self. Therefore, I don't need to try to make I happy. Instead, my job is to get rid of its course, its core, ignorance and attachment. Then you start to understand that, you know, it's not me. Instead, it's the Father within me. It's not me. It's a feeling. It's a feeling that I have. So now you're no longer thinking about how can I be happy. Now you're thinking about how can I get rid of ignorance and attachment. So before you went out in the world trying to collect as many views as you possibly can. Now you're doing the complete opposite. Now you're thinking, how can I get rid of the views I can possibly have? This is why the Mahasangha and norm, ordinary and extraordinary, are worlds apart. 180 degrees apart. Because one is trying to take, and one is trying to release. Now you no longer try to collect and try to get as much as possible. Now instead, you're trying to get rid as much as possible. Now, when I say getting rid, I don't mean get rid of physical things. Although, you know, it kind of seems like that, doesn't it? You know, someone who used to have a massive house, you know, now builds a small house with like 1-2 rooms in Sudamisugama and stays there. So it almost seems as though people who had lots of things now have little amount of things. But it's not that they had to let all that go. Instead, they understood what the purpose was. So what we're trying, what happens now is you understand that this is just a feeling. However, we're still on this path. Because the Mahasangha is a journey. The Mahasangha is a path. Just because you understand that jati is just a feeling, that I is just a feeling, does that mean everything is over? Thank you, the end, we wash our hands and we go home. Is that how it works? No, except we have, because of ignorance and attachments, there'll be time, well, most of the time, if not almost all of the time, we live and breathe with what? Ignorance and attachment. And therefore, we continue to feel I. And now we have to use the Dhamma that we understand, right? We use the antidote of anicca, dukkha, anatta to get rid of ignorance and attachment. But the thing is, we can't do that. We can't force ourselves to, you know, do anicca, dukkha, anatta. That's why you need the environment. That's why the Mahasangha is also what? The environment. The environment of the Mahasangha. So for the ordinary, you know, in your normal lives, you can do whatever you want. Right, whether you want to say today, do you want to go and eat at a restaurant? You can go and eat at a restaurant. If you want to turn on the TV and watch something, you can turn on TV and watch something. If you want to do anything, you just do it. No questions asked. But for the extraordinary, the Mahasangha, now what? You have an environment. You have an environment that has changed from ordinary to extraordinary, which now says what? You know, today I feel like, you know, I'm very hungry. Let's find a way, you know. I want to eat, I want to eat a pizza. Environment says what? You cannot. Instead, ignorance and attachment causes vexation. So what does it do? Then instead of, you know, before you had your own comfort zones. This is what I like. This is who I am. You know, I wake up at this time. I do this at this time. And you make your own, you have your own idea of who you are. Here, the environment causes you to think. I want to eat pizza. You go and go ask your teacher. Teacher, I want to eat pizza. Teacher says what? Ha ha ha. Who? Why? How? Teacher says what? Who? Why? How? Who wants to eat pizza? Why do you want to eat pizza? How do you want to eat pizza? And now instead of you thinking, you know, I'm going to eat pizza, you know, where am I going to get from Pizza Hut or that the restaurant that I found the other day that was very nice. Now you're thinking, no, why do I want to eat pizza? Why am I vexing? Because I have attachment. Why am I attached? Because of ignorance. Ignorance of what? Of the nature of nature. Now instead of going and living in your comfort zone, you're stepping one step outside and now what are we contemplating? This is why the Mahasangha, the environment of the Mahasangha is very useful. But you can say, you know, well, if I'm at home, I can do the same thing, can't I? When I want to eat pizza, I'll contemplate. Can you really? I mean, for example, really good example is, you know, these sermons go online on YouTube. How hard is it not to click on another thumbnail? You know, those of you who, you know, frequent YouTube will know how difficult it is to stay and just listen. You know, I was talking to my mother the other day. And she was telling me, you know, now I'm here, like all the things, the only thing I've done is I have literally just, you know, cooking rice and just cleaning and doing nothing, you know, back when I was with the Srila Shravikas, you know, I was, you know, being able to listen to the sermon just as, you know, I can't do anything but what? Listen to sermons, practice the path. When I'm eating, I have to contemplate. You know, now when I you know, listen to a sermon, I know I can pause it. So, you know, if there's something else I need to do, I'll pause it and then go and do that and come back and I forget what I was listening to. So I have to go back another 5 minutes. But when I'm there listening to live, it's different. Now, I think you all understand that listening to a sermon live and listening to a recording is very different. Because listening to a live, you have to keep focused. For example, you know, you're not at home. So something that I told my mother is that, you know, she would listen to a sermon normally, put on the TV and sit on the sofa. What order is? Well, in the monastery, do you sit on sofas? Because she's telling me, I don't get the monastery feel. I said, in the monastery, do you sit on sofas? No. So where should you be sitting? On a chair. Then go take a chair. Because this environment is essential. This environment is key. This environment is what is conducive for you to understand this process. You know, in the ordinary life, you live and breathe in your comfort zones. In the extraordinary life, your comfort zone is challenged. In your ordinary life, whenever you face a problem, you just have to deal with it. Think about it, right? Whenever you are angry, right, what can you do? Right? Either you just have to, you know, suck it up and just live on, or you start, you know, venting to a friend saying, you know, this happened, that happened, and you want the friend to say, oh, really, did that happen? They shouldn't have done that, and just to agree with you. That's all you want. Technically, if you just had another random person just to say, yeah, really? That's enough for you. But now you, with the extraordinary, now you have, not now when you're angry, you have a solution. A solution to stop it. Either that's with you or with your teacher. So living in the environment of the Mahasangha, you have a teacher. You have a teacher. Who is your teacher? Who is your teacher? Question's wrong. There is no who in teacher. Is what is your teacher? Your timetable, if you have a timetable. That's again. If you have a timetable, your timetable is your teacher. What time is it? It's 9:30. What do I do at 9:30? I need to take a shower. But I also want to, you know, go to the library and read a book. But 9:30 is a shower. My teacher. My teacher says at 10 o'clock I have to sleep. Your timetable is your teacher. Who else is your teacher? Your fellow companion. The person next to you is your teacher. You're in the Valley Malur. Right? You're contemplating really hard. Right? And you're now drifting off somewhere. As you drift, as your mind drifts off to a faraway place, your head also starts to become heavy. You start nodding. So what does your teacher do? The person next to you? What do they do? And you are much merits. And now you contemplate more. That is your teacher. Now let's say you are home all by yourself. You decide, I have an extra 10 minutes. Right? I got an extra half an hour. I'm going to start contemplating. And you sit down on the floor, leaning against the wall. Right? You plan to meditate for half an hour. Right? You get out of the meditation after 1.5 hours. Right? What have you done? Meditated. But dreamed while meditating. You fell asleep. There's no one there. That's why the Mahasangha, the environment of the Mahasangha, the energy of the Mahasangha is very useful. The other day I told you about a monk that every single day will do what he calls a Vateyandana, where he would take a journey from the Valley Moluwe. And when I say every night, I honestly mean every night. One day, one of our monks had an injury. And we had agreed that we would go and medicate. But when we went to medicate, it was probably 1 in the morning, right? But after we medicated this sick monk, right, we all came back to the monastery, and then from there he said, "Abhyamdul, let's go," and he took me. And 1 in the morning, right, when we're all very tired, he went and said, "Let's go." Went from the Valimolu to the Buddha shrine, to the pagoda, and then he went to sleep. Now that environment is also what? That is also a teacher. That is also a teacher. Because if you don't have someone like that, who's going to give you the view? Who's going to give you the view? Who's going to give you the view? I mean, if there is no one like that in your life, who's going to give you the right view? See, living in this environment of the Mahasangha, you get to see people who are doing this. For example, I know several monks who would wake up. Normally in a monastery, we wake up at 4 in the morning to go to our doctrine session at 4:30. I know several monks who wake up at 3. Why? Before they go to doctrine, they go to the Valley Monastery, meditate for half an hour, go to the shrine, chant Buddha Guna, and then go to the doctrine. This is the sasana. This is the Mahasangha. These are the views that we take. These are what keeps us, this is what motivates us. This is what we call, this is what we call the teacher. This is what we call the teacher. This is why ordinary and extraordinary are completely different. What does the ordinary tell you? Whenever you're sleepy, what should you do? Whenever you're sleepy, you should go to sleep. You look tired. How many hours did you sleep last night? 5, 6, 7 hours? 7 hours, you should be sleeping 9, 10. You look sleepy, go to sleep. You look sleepy, I have a good thing for that. Take this medicine and you will not feel sleepy. Honey, you look very thin. You have to eat more. Now, eating, I'm not saying about eating, but the view that, you have to do this, to be happy, do all this and you'll be happy. The Mahasangha? Get rid of those views. You now have, instead of taking views about how things are pleasurable, you're taking views about the path. What should I do to contemplate? How should I contemplate? For example, something that I continue to praise is, the things that we do, the things that the Mahasangha. So remember, the Mahasangha doesn't just mean monks. For example, I know a couple of weeks back, some of our Siddha Shravakas, where they went all the way to Dambulla to help do massive amount of merits to give us manioca. From that day onwards, we had manioca hodi. Then the next day we had the next meal, you have manioca fried, and then manioca. I mean, it was entire, if I remember correctly, 1.5 weeks of manioca. Not complaining. But, I mean, I think they spent a couple of days there, helping out in the fields and collecting as much merit, as well as, giving the Mahasangha what? Nutrients. Nutrients to practice their path. I mean, there is a very distinct line between these. I mean, they're not, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary is just the E, the extra. No, they're actually completely different. I don't like, that, ordinary and extraordinary. The extraordinary has the word ordinary in it. I don't agree. There is nothing ordinary about the Mahasangha. Nothing ordinary. They are 180 degrees apart. If a person was to go on a path this way and another person to go on a path this way, their lives will completely change, whether you go become ordinary or extraordinary. Those lives will completely change. This is why the Mahasangha is something that is worthy of your worship. This is why the Mahasangha is one of the greatest energies in this world. So again, who is the Mahasangha? Not a robe and a bald head. We are all part of the Mahasangha. But that doesn't mean the Mahasangha is perfect. I mean, the Mahasangha is perfect. But the individuals in the Mahasangha, are they perfect? They are trying to get rid of ignorance and attachment. Does it mean it's gone? That's why, our teachers use the best analogy for what the monastery or what the Mahasangha is. The Mahasangha is a hospital. We are all what? Patients. We are all patients. So this is why, you'll see, everyone makes mistakes here and there, but we are all there trying to correct them, getting rid of ignorance and attachment to go one step forward. To go one step forward, coming to take that next step forward for us to attain our liberation, to get rid of ignorance and attachment. This is why your teachers will continue to ask you to join the Mahasangha. That doesn't mean to come and live and become a monk or an anagarika. No, join this environment. If you can create this environment at home, perfect. Well, that's very difficult. Next to impossible. Because if you ask yourself, what in this world is actually helping you to attain Nibbana? What in this world is helping you to attain Nibbana? I get to listen to these sermons online. So, online, YouTube is conducive for Nibbana. The internet is conducive for Nibbana. The TV is conducive for Nibbana. Right, let's put those aside because we know that those can give different views. What about your house? Is your house helping you to attain Nibbana? Is your house helping you to attain Nibbana? Is the house giving you the correct views for you to contemplate and to understand about ignorance and attachment? Instead, you see the house and you see what? This is my house. This is one fixed house. This is my house. I live in this house. I have to clean it. I have to upkeep it. So am I understanding that this is a feeling, or am I understanding that this is what it is? I'm understanding that this is, I am there and this is my house. So is your house helping you attain Nibbana? What about your clothes? This is my robe. I have two robes. I have an alms bowl. What part of that is, you know, this world is anicca, all cause and effect, all energy. Where is that? You know, my patkada is what helps me attain Nibbana. My patkada is what helps me attain Nibbana. Is it? Forget the my part. Patkada. The moment I say patkada, the moment you remember patkada, do you see it to be, you know, part of nature, or do you see it to be separate? So is that helping you to attain Nibbana? Is that something that's helping you understand about ignorance and attachment? Or showing you that there is something separate in this world? What about the hair on your head? That's why monks are bald, right? No. The hair on your head, are they helping you to attain Nibbana? Do you see it to be fixed? Or do you see it to be a manifestation? You look in the mirror, what do you see? What do you see? A fixed hair. A fixed face. A fixed hand. A fixed finger. So your body itself is helping you to attain Nibbana. What in this universe is helping you to attain Nibbana? One thing and one thing alone. What's that? The Mahasangha, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, the Noble Triple Gem. They're the only things in this entire universe that is helping you to attain Nibbana. Everything else is against. For example, you know, you take a pen, you break the pen. You know how in some nyayas, in some doctrines that we do, you know, some people take apart pens. No matter, you know, unless you are focused, unless you are conscious, you are mindfully aware, what do you see? You see what? Parts. Parts of what? Parts of a pen. The other day, one of our monks was doing a sermon to some group of people, and a really good thing, a really good idea that he had was, you know, he broke apart a pen and said, you know, what is this? Parts. Are they really parts? You know, you think, you know, the moment we talk about cause and effects, the first thing that comes to our head is, you know, we can break everything into what? Parts. You know, I can break this pen into its parts. I can break this into its parts. I can break this board into its parts. That's why it's cause and effect. Parts? Parts of what? If you have parts, you have a whole. If you have, again, because you can only have a part of a whole. So, you know, when you break apart a pen, you see what? Parts of a pen. So is a pen actually helping you to attain Nibbana? This is why it's the Noble Triple Gem and the Noble Triple Gem alone that helps you come back from this. This is why the Mahasangha is very important. This is why the Mahasangha is always there to push you to take the next step. See, look how important your teachers are. So in our monastery, we all have a personal teacher, right? Which it's almost compulsory. It is compulsory. unless they are busy, to have a guru, a teacher's meeting. And when you're in your teacher's meeting, what does your teacher do? Are you doing this or doing this? Are you here or are you here? Are you doing this? If you're doing this, then try doing this. Try doing this. If you're doing this, try doing this in this sort of way. In other words, your teacher is trying to change the way you think. You tell your teacher, "Teacher, you know, the other day, you know, I got really angry with so-and-so." What does the teacher say? Okay, where did that come from? So what should you do? I know some people, lots of people will have this idea that, you know, sometimes it's very useless to go to your teacher, because the teacher will tell you the same thing. What? This is the problem. Teacher, you know, I got angry. This is the problem. What's the solution? That's the solution. Teacher, I'm sad today. What's the problem? Solution? Teacher, I went to the Valley Mall, right? But I couldn't contemplate. What's the problem? Solution? Teacher, the other day, this happened. Problem? Solution? But there is that is what they will do. That is the entire purpose. To show you the actual problem, to show you the solution. But then you can say, then I don't need a teacher because I know the problem, I know the solution, right? I know it's ignorance and attachment, I know it's really. But you don't know at that moment. The moment you're facing a problem, do you know it's ignorance and attachment? You know. But what do you feel? No, I can't wake up at 4 in the morning. I'm not an early bird. I can work late at night. I can't wake up in the morning. You know, you tell me to go to sleep at 4, I can go to sleep at 4. But waking up at 4, very difficult. So what did the teacher say? Why is that? See, your teacher is who? Your teacher is someone to keep you on track. This is why when you go to your teacher's meeting, be as free as you possibly can. To show them, how am I actually doing it? It's funny, right? You know, the more ego you have, the less contemplation you can do. The less contemplation you can do, the ego does not decrease. So, you know, if you're trying to protect yourself in front of your teacher, so instead of you saying that, you know, today I felt, you know, when we went on arms and the dal curry was really good. Instead of telling your teacher that, instead you said, you know, when I had the dal curry, I was contemplating. You're doing that to protect yourself. What you're doing is you're showing the teacher something, and the teacher can't read minds. Teacher can't read minds. I mean, the Buddha passed away 2,500 years, more than 2,500 years back. So if you try to protect yourself in front of your teacher, you are doing your own harm. You are creating your own demise. This is why whenever you meet, you know, your teacher, be as open as you possibly can. Because the extraordinary doesn't label. The extraordinary doesn't judge. The ordinary? Ordinary? They label. The ordinary? They judge. Because the extraordinary understands that it's a mind. Ordinary understands it's I. This is why, you know, we are extremely lucky to have the Mahasangha. We are extremely fortunate to have the Mahasangha with us. If it weren't for the Mahasangha, we would have none of this. This is why we worship three times: to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. The Buddha, the energy that brought all this into this world, who uncovered, the energy that uncovered the truth. The Dhamma is the truth itself, and the Mahasangha is the extraordinary. This is why we worship three times. This is why three is a very important number. That's why we say Buddhang Sarnam Gacchami, Dhammang Sarnam Gacchami, Sanghang Sarnam Gacchami. Dutiyampi, Tatiyampi. Again, three. The noble triple gem. Noble triple gem. That's why I say Kayana Vacha three times as well. Noble triple gem. And also something that's also very interesting is that, you know, each and every one of us, you know, after we've done some sort of merit, what do we wish for? What do we wish for? The moment, you know, each and every one of us, after we do merits, what is it that we wish for? May, by the power of these merits, may I attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Now, something that's very interesting is, attaining the supreme bliss of Nibbana, what does that include? What does that include? That, you know, when I attain supreme bliss of Nibbana, you know, I will have, a really good place to stay. Is that part of the package? You know, I will be given a position, a really high position, you know, amongst my fellow companions. Is that part of the package? That I will have a really high-paying job. Is that part of the package? What's part of the package of Nibbana? What is part of the package for Nibbana? What is the package? You know, every time you do the merit, you say what? After every Buddha Puja, what do you say? You know, may I not associate ignoble immoral people, may I associate the noble ones until I attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So what are you actually wishing for? May the causes align that I associate the noble ones. You know, this is why, you know, sometimes. And it was funny because I was talking to a couple the other day, and you know, the husband has lost his job, and he's very upset about it. And the wife kept saying, "Well, it's your fault. Why? Because every time you say Imina Punya Kamena, Mami Barasamango, you know, you don't want to associate noble immoral people. You want to associate noble ones. So you know, now you've lost your job. Now you can go to the monastery." You know, every time you do merits, you wish that may I attain Nibbana, so now you can go to the monastery and become an Anagarika. Forget about your job. I mean, what she's saying is completely true. Because you don't say imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu, but I also want my job, I also want a house, and I also want to keep my car. Where do you say that? Where did you sign to this agreement? This is why, you know, life will have its path. According to your merits, your life will change. This is why we don't need to control our life. All we have to do is accept. Accept what is happening. You become the head of the you know, they create a committee, you know, the Siddha Shravaka committee, where, you know, only five of you are there to take decisions or whatnot, let's say. You're one day you're there, next day you're out. You know, it's really unfair that I'm out. Is it? It's really unfair that I got picked. Is it? If you do merits and hope that you attain Nibbana, is it? Is it really? No, we have to learn to accept. Today your job is to look after, 3-year-old kids. 3-year-old kids? What do you think we are nannies, huh? Take care of 3-year-old kids. If you wish, may I attain the supreme bliss Nibbana. That is your opportunity. Because who knows? You are thinking that I'm practicing so hard, I have good understanding of Dhamma. You get to look after 3-year-old kids and you realize, I have a long, long way to go. That itself is what? A step forward. Because now you start to understand defilements. We can't say that, this is not what I'm supposed to do. If your teachers, right, or if, when I mean teachers, I mean your environment, if your environment changes, what we have to do is accept it. Okay, that's fine. If that is it, then it is. So what? Yimina punya gammena mahami bhadama. We wish that. What happens if I lose my house? Well, so be it. Accept it. What happens if I lose my job? So be it. Accept it. What happens if, something terrible happens? Okay, so be it. This is why, your determinations are so strong. That's why, if you are determined, right, every day if you have that determination that I want to attain Nibbana, the world will change for you. To create the causes for you. Alright, let's say, you become terminally ill. God forbid that something happens and you become terminally ill. What should you do? Accept it. Who knows, at your last breath, right? And before you take your last breath, you have an amazing moment of contemplation, you pass away as an arahant. Who knows? So you shouldn't cry. You shouldn't lament, I'm terminally ill, I only have another month to live, another week to live. How am I going to do all these merits? When I pass away, where am I going to go to? Will I go into the 4 great hells? I have to do lots of merits so I can go to the heavens. No, accept it. Do what needs to be done. Because when you do it, your environment will change. Who knows? That's why, the Buddha says, if you practice the path without giving, if you'll continue to practice the path, getting rid of ignorance and attachment for 7 days to 7 years, you will, guaranteed, right, written in stone, guaranteed, you will become what? Either an arahant, at the very minimum, an anagami. So what do? You practice. Practice to the maximum you possibly can. And there's nothing more you need to do. So what do you have to practice? That's the next question. What is it that we have to practice? Thank you. what we have to do is very simple. Very simple, but yet very difficult. We have to understand the nature of nature. So what is the nature of nature? Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Now, what is when we talk about the nature of nature, it's almost as though I'm taking an object and I'm describing three different parts. That is what we're trying to do. We look at an object and you can see an object in three different angles. You can see it in the angle of anicca, you can see in the angle of dukkha, you can see in the angle of anatta. But you're seeing what? This. You're seeing the same thing, but just in three different angles. But in the very end, you're seeing the same thing. So what is there in this world? What is there in this world? In this world, there is just one thing. What's that? In this world, there's just one thing. What is that? There is? There's only one thing. What is it? You know, it's very easy to think that, you know, there are, when we talk about, you know, anicca, we talk about, you know, the cause and effect nature. But like I said, when we talk about cause and effect, when we think about causes, we think about parts, don't we? When we think about causes, we think about parts. So if I asked you to see the cause and effect nature of a car, what do you think about? A car has, you know, a body, and it's got its windshield, it's got its wheels, and it's got a steering wheel, it's got an engine, and you're thinking about the parts of the car. And so, you know, even though we are thinking about the cause and effect nature, the next thing that we bind ourselves onto is the parts, the causes. So this is why Guru and our teachers, they take it one step further and no longer talk about causes, but they talk about what? Energy. Because now you don't have parts. So, you know, let's say wheels, four wheels, I don't know, engine, steering wheel. Instead of talking about parts, we're talking about what? Energy. Because when we talk about energy, this and this are what? They're both the same. Same meaning, they're both made from what? They're both condensed energy. They're both condensed energy. But before, if we took the car with its four wheels, engine and steering wheel, it's a very nice car, and we looked at the pen, you automatically see a difference. You automatically see a difference. This is a pen, this is a car. Car, pen. But when we talk about energy, you come to this, automatically, you come to this understanding that this and this are made from the same things. What? Energy. So, all energy is trying to do is come to its most stable state. What is that state? Its pure state, which we call, theoretically, we call pure energy. Every time, energy wants to come to its most pure state. And we have this hypothetical name of pure energy. Now, this is, when we talk about cause and effect, we are also talking about that, aren't we? Because when the causes align, the effect manifests for as long as what? The causes are there. Because the moment the causes stop coming together, what happens to the object? Or what happens to the manifestation? Does it stay for another 1 minute, 1 second, 1 millisecond? You know, when did it disappear? When did it disappear? Let me show you again. Magic, right? I have it. When did it disappear? the very moment the causes changed, it disappeared. So it is always at a state where it is trying to disperse. Everything's at a state that it's trying to disperse. Whether it's a car, whether it's a pen, whether it's it, it's always at a moment where it's trying to disperse. So when we talk about anicca, we're not just talking about the coming together as well. We're talking about dispersion as well. We're talking about this fundamental rule or this fundamental law of cause and effect. Causes coming together to give rise to manifestation, as well as this dispersion. Because remember, all energy wants to do is succumb to its pure state. Right? To the most stable form. Just like we want to, right? We always want to be stable, right? That's why if you're high up somewhere on something really small and thin, we feel really uncomfortable because we want to be, you know, have 2 feet on the ground and feel safe. Because we want to be stable, so does energy. Energy wants to be in this most stable form. However, when a necessity is there, when there is a necessity, when necessity arises, it creates almost a black hole which takes everything around it to give rise to a manifestation. For as long as necessity is there, energy is taken and is put together to give rise to what? A manifestation. But it's only there for as long as necessity is there. For as long as there is this necessity. So for example, right? A simple water molecule. Now we do talk about science because science is a very easy way of trying to understand this, because science itself is trying to understand the nature of nature. So all we're trying to do is understand, we're trying to understand science in a more advanced way. Because for science, you know, these are all fixed things. Water is a fixed thing. You add energy and it changes and it's all fixed. But we're trying to understand it in a completely different, or we're understanding it in its true nature. This is always there, right? This molecule is there for as long as the causes are there, right? Oh, for as long as there's this necessity. When the necessity changes, what happens to the molecule? So very simply, you know, if I was to, you know, give this extra energy, the moment I give this extra energy, what happens? Causes will change, and then you get, you know, it disperses. It disperses. But again, when there is a necessity, when I mean necessity, the only problem when we talk about necessity is who? The question comes up is who wants it? Who is it? What is necessary for who? It's not talking about who. It's talking about this idea of, you know, of the need for causes to come together. So if energy can come and take this and change this formation, is this one fixed thing? Is this one fixed thing? It is not. It is a manifestation. However, it has the quality of it being stuck together, because you don't look at something and it doesn't disperse. Why does it not disperse? Because it has necessity. Necessity meaning there are causes at play that keeps these together. For example, if there was no extra energy, water is not stable, but it is stable at that moment. Because necessity of water is there. The necessity of water is there. But the moment you change the necessity, now water, you can't say the water changes. Instead, the arrangement changes to give rise to another formation. So is this separate? Is this different? Is this and water different? Now, this is the thing. Theoretically, we understand. Theoretically, this makes perfect sense. Everything is cause and effect. Everything is, you know, is energy and all this stuff. But the question is, can you see the world like that? Can you see the world to be energy? Can you see everything dispersing every time? You know, is everything trying to disperse? Can you see it trying to disperse? No, everything is put together because of this what we call the quality of dukkha. The quality of dukkha keeps it almost bounded together. And therefore, you come to realize, you feel, right, without understanding this, you feel this to be what? One fixed thing. Because the quality of dukkha is almost like a gum that keeps things stuck together. That keeps things stuck together. Because now, this is not trying to, you know, you're not seeing, you know, this all like trying to disperse. Instead, you see it all to be one fixed entity. So like I said, this is all theoretically very easy to theoretically you can understand it. But the difficulty is putting it into practice. See, when you see someone, do you come to see them to be energy? This is why, you know, just listening to the Dhamma is not enough. Just coming, you know, this is why your teachers will always tell you, you know, just coming every Saturday and Sunday and, you know, just coming 1-2 days isn't enough for you, because, you know, you're trying to understand the nature of nature. Understand everything to be, because when you see people, do you see energy? Do you see them to be, you know, everything is part of it, everything is energy? Or do you see them to be individual people? You know, he's like this, she's like this, and you see individualism. But what we are trying to do here is trying to put into our minds, put into practice this idea that everyone is part of the same thing, that this is all the same. There is no fixed item, fixed entity here. That it's all just, you know, the coming together of energy to form an effect or a manifestation. See, why do we talk about this outside? Because if you really think about it, there's no point of talking about the outside because you've never seen the outside. Have you? You don't know what the outside is like. Because the outside is something that manifests in what? In your own mind. This outside world isn't something that you've ever seen. Outside your senses, you don't know what there is. So we're actually talking about the anicca nature, the dukkha nature, the anatta nature of what? The outside? No, about your perception. I mean, hypothetically, if you were to take that, you know, outside, there is something that's fixed. Unfortunately, when it comes to your mind, it is what? It's not fixed. It's anicca. Because for it to come to your mind, for it to be perceived in your mind, it has to go through a process of cause and effect. See, hypothetically, let's say this is fixed. This is a fixed object. Again, hypothetically, we know it isn't. Hypothetically, let's say it's fixed. You perceiving this comes from what? Does this come and enter your eye? Does this do anything? No, it just sits there. But there's a process at play here for you to perceive this. Process meaning, you know, light coming and, you know, things happening here, reflecting, and then going through your eye, through all these nerves, going to the brain, and creating, and the brain sending the signal to the mind arising with the idea of duster, whiteboard or whiteboard eraser, or whatever you call it. It arises with that idea. It arises in a mind that is what? It arises in a mind that is what? Subject to anicca, dukkha, anatta. So even though this is fixed, no matter how fixed this is, when you perceive it, that perception is what? Anicca, dukkha, anatta. This is why, you know, you can't contemplate for external things. Because as you are contemplating for external things, what are you actually contemplating on? Your internal world. The more you contemplate on your internal world, what you are doing is you are putting anicca into your lives. The moment you put anicca into your lives, what you're doing is you're getting rid of ignorance. That's why you don't need to do anything but see this world as it truly is. Now, that doesn't mean that after, you know, contemplating for, say, 36 hours, you start to see everything trying to disperse. You see everything that, you know, you start to see things differently. No, you see things the same. Because in Arahantanmanse, their eyes don't change. Their senses don't change. The only difference is their understanding or this ignorance and attachments is no longer there. Therefore, they see the world as it is. So they see this whiteboard marker, they see this whiteboard marker. The only difference is they no longer see it to be a fixed entity. So for example, you know, I think that the best way to explain this is, you know, let's say the monastery hires a magician to do a magic show in front of everyone. Right? Let's say, you know, we hired a magician to do a magical show. Where he pulls a bunny out of a hat and turns into a dove, and the dove flies, and then, you know, he pulls out a card out of thin air. You know, for someone who doesn't understand the anicca nature, you think, wow, a fixed bunny became a fixed hat. There's a fixed hat, and they took a bunny out of this fixed hat. That fixed bunny became a dove, and it becomes so magical. But for an Arahantanmanse, okay, so he pulled a card out of thin air. Okay, so, I mean, that's just how it is, isn't it? But for an ignorant mind, what? How did this magician pull this bunny out of a hat? Now, we know that there has to be some sort of logic, and that's why we look for the logic and we say, you know, the hat has this compartment and, you know, there's the stuff in his sleeves or whatnot. But for Ayatollah, they think, okay, cause is aligned, manifest. I mean, they don't even need to think about, you know, it's all cause and effect. Because inertly, from the very bottom, from the very start, they see what? Cause and effect. That's why it's very, you know, the only person that can explain the true mindset of an Arjuna is what? An Arjuna. Because we can only guess. It might be like this, might not. I mean, these are not just guesses, but these are good, hypothesis, right? But we can't say that. Will he see it to be cause and effect? Will he see it to be this? Will he see it to be that? We can't say that. Will they see it like this or see it like that? But we know that the ignorance and attachment are no longer at play. If they're no longer at play, then magic is no longer magic. Magic is no longer magical. Instead, it's just how it is. Just how it is. So coming back to this, the nature of nature, all we have to do is have that understanding. And remember, don't be focused on the words here. Anicca means cause and effect. I mean, I know lots of people, the moment that, Guru Ramadhan says anicca, they write down, okay, anicca, what does it mean? Equals cause and effect, or equals manifestation, equals, and they write down exactly what Guru Ramadhan says, or the teacher says, and they practice that. Don't do that. For example, last sermon, when Guru Ramadhan starts talking about that anicca means the dispersion, a lot of people came up and like, well, isn't that anatta? Isn't that not anicca? Is that... Because we are very focused on the wording here. But anicca is not a word. Anicca is not supposed to be a word. Anicca is a feeling. This is why, take that word and give it a feeling. Understand the feeling, not understand the words. So don't go and, whenever you start contemplating on anicca, don't think, okay, cause and effect. This is cause and effect. That is cause and effect. No, understand the feeling of anicca. Because once you've understood the feeling of anicca, now you no longer need words. There is no longer need for words. There's no longer need to think about the words. Instead, the feeling arises. Because I remember I used to have this question long ago that, when you are contemplating, whenever I see something, do I have to think, oh, this is cause and effect, this is cause and effect, this is cause and effect, this is cause and effect? Well, I'm going to have a very boring life, aren't I? I'm going to have to think, well, cause and effect. I'm not going to be able to do anything because I have to think what? Cause and effect, 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 cause and effect. That's not what you need to do. You have to understand the feeling of anicca. Understand the feeling of dukkha, understand the feeling of anatta, and put it to the world. Then when you see anything, you see what? You feel what? Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Don't focus on the words. Don't focus on the words. Focus on the feeling. Because when you focus on the feeling, you're able to apply it to anything, anywhere. You're able to apply it to anything, anywhere. Regardless of place, regardless of time. But the moment you focus on the words, now you have to constantly think about it. This pen is cause and effect. This pen is cause and effect because it's got a lid, it's got a body, it's got this, and the causes are coming together. I mean, to start off, that's how we start, of course. No one can start off with understanding the feeling because we don't have the wisdom of Dharjir Maharatnansi. The moment the Buddha says, Ditte ditta matang, we don't have that amount of wisdom. So we start off by thinking about pens and this. But we move on to have the feeling. The moment you have the feeling, all you have to do is live life with the feeling of Anicca Dukkhanatha turned on. That is the contemplation. Now it's no longer, do I understand Anicca Dukkhanatha? Now it's, how long can I keep the switch on? How many hours? Now you no longer need to be doing specific things. You can be doing anything. You can be sweeping the hall, but you now have the feeling of Anicca Dukkhanatha at play here. You no longer feel that I am sweeping. No, sweeping is happening. You are no longer, whenever, let's say, you're decorating the Dhamma hall. You're no longer thinking, you know, okay, this flower belongs here. No, you're thinking, no, these are causes coming to me. It's a feeling that, you know, these are causes coming to play here. I mean, you won't be able to see, well, let's say you have a bunch of flowers. You won't be able to see that beauty in it. But you would know that this is what beauty, what people find beautiful. That's knowledge. When you no longer feel beauty, you understand beauty. When you no longer feel, or when you no longer feel taste, or feel how tasty something is, you understand taste. This is when you come to the real world. And this is how you come to the real world. So remember, you know, understand not the words here. Take the feelings. Because remember, the Buddha says, Padaparamas cannot attain Nibbana. Padaparamas are people who focus on the words. Cannot attain Nibbana. People who are focused on the words cannot attain Nibbana. Take the feeling. Take the feeling to the maximum you possibly can. Understand the feeling of Nibbana. Okay. The more you practice, the more easy it becomes. I think something that you have to understand is that this is a journey. That's not easy. But it's like it's inertia. To start off, it's very difficult. You know, just try to remember the time that, you know, you had to start doing something. The amount of resistance that is there. But the more you keep doing it, the resistance will reduce. The more you keep doing, the resistance will reduce. And the more it reduces, it becomes easier. That's why the journey to Nibbana isn't a straight line. It's a curve. An exponential curve that goes from, that's not like this, but this. Because it becomes easier the more you practice. The more you practice, the more easier it becomes. And both of them will help each other for it to go. So at the beginning, it's very difficult. I mean, this looks like almost as though nothing's happening. But something is happening. You all heard of the Chinese bamboo, right? It takes, I think, 2 years under the soil. But once after the 2 years, it grows, I think, 3-4 inches every day, if I remember correctly. Say again? 5 years under the soil, and it grows how much? Do we know? I think it grows, so these bamboos, they stay under the soil for 5 years. So, you know, it's funny because you imagine you're growing, you know, these bamboo trees. You put it under the soil, you plant it, and you keep it down. And someone just sees you watering a soil for 5 years. They see you watering a patch of soil for 5 years. People will think you're crazy. But after the 5 years have passed, this bamboo grows inches a day. I think people have even said they can see the bamboo tree grow by, you know, with their bare eyes. That's why it's an exponential curve. This is why, you know, you have to nurture the mind. Because at one point, the nurturing will happen by itself. This is why, you know, do as much merit as you possibly can. This is why, you know, this is why Guru Ramdas always talks about this sudugati, these good qualities. These are what nurtures the mind. These are what the mind needs to start to begin. But after a while, you become part of this sudugati. And then the path itself becomes easier. The path itself becomes faster. So practice. Practice, no matter how hard it is, practice. The more you practice, the easier it will become. Do we have any notices today? We have our discussions after, is it 12 or 12:30? 12. At 12:30. 12:30 in this, in Evan here. Sure. I mean, you're completely right. I mean, like I said, you know, we're talking about three different angles of the same object. Anicca Dukkha Anatta is talking about the three different angles of the same object. So that's why, you know, if you looked at every teaching of the Buddha, you know, all 84,000 of them, they are basically talking about the same thing in different ways. It's like, I think, another analogy that my teachers have given is that it's like the medicine is the same. The only difference is the shape and color of the pill. Inside the medicine is exactly the same. One pill is triangular. One pill is, you know, a capsule. One pill is like, it's the same thing. So if you look at the Satrasatipatthana, that, you know, Kayanupassana, Vedanapasana, Chittanapasana, Dhammanapasana, they're all talking about the same thing. Actually, we looked at it, if you understand Kayanupasana, that itself is enough for you to attain Nibbana. You don't, I mean, it's there is a journey. But if you truly understand one, you understand all. That's why, if you understand Anicca, if you truly understand Anicca, Dukkha Anatta becomes apparent to you. If you understand Dukkha, Anicca Anatta becomes apparent. If you understand Anatta, Anicca Dukkha becomes apparent. Because it's talking about the same thing. Same thing in three different angles. Alright, so anatta is this idea of this idea of almost special. Special meaning? Because it's this idea that it is different from everything else. Again, like don't take the word for it, because if you say it's fixed, that's also part of dukkha. That's also part of anicca. I mean, it's all part of the same thing. But anatta is more focused on this idea of separate from nature. This idea of it being separate from nature. So different. I think that's the best way to explain it. It is different. It is unique. Different. It is different. It is unique. So that thing, you know, the more you understand the Dhamma, the more deeper these feelings become. That's why anicca dukkha anatta, you can't give a one word. Even the Buddha himself, you know, he says in one sermon, he says, you know, anicca anatta. He says in one sermon, you know, that anicca is vexation. In another sermon, the Buddha himself will say anicca means cause and effect. Because he's talking about, because you can't give one exact word for anicca, because it's a feeling. So, you know, there's no. Because even if I say it's different, it's unique, it's more than that. It's more than that, but fundamentally, that is what it is. Like if you talk about cause and effect, anicca cause and effect. But inside that, just the feeling of dispersion is also there. So again, the more you understand, the more you're able to give it a feeling. So don't focus on the words, instead focus on the feeling. Okay. Do we have any other questions? Take the silence as a note. Alright, let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits required by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected, preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer the merits to all the members of Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all of the chief priests of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to betterment of divorced sentient beings. Let us not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, the thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take one transfer message to Gurusan Nansi, as well as all the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's also take one chance to merits to an express of gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating sermons, share them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if anything have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and enter the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, alms, and medicines, as well as those who pass on to know how to extend their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all those who have helped us, support us, assist us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to devas and brahmas, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill some of the sasanam. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities who keep a watchful eye of us, keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the wayward path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a chance to merits our ancestors who have predeceased us, to always been friends of family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let's also take a chance to merits to all those who have helped us, supported us, assist us in every shape or form. Resulting one chance to mention all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. There's also taking one chance of merit to all those lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in the long journey to Sansara. May by the power of the merits, if any of them be born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and born in the discipline. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let's all resolve, may the power and the blessing of all the merits acquired the other day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arath Mahin nuances in the blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired the other day. You and I and everyone made the program a success, become an Arath Nuanse or Arath Mahin Nuanse in its very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Chupacham be with you. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sep labeva Nivan sep labeva Nivan sep labeva Tunwangi Susyananta Mahagana Balin Sri Loka Sri Satyam Nibbana Paramasukhin Sukhitaravetu Sadhu.